This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show. This is the Rich Eisen Show.
The Jets?
I haven't enjoyed a football season since 1969.
From the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Jets are tearing it all down.
Wow, they really are.
Today's guests, Pro Football Hall of Famer Kurt Warner, Chargers safety Derwin James, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show here on a Wednesday. Kurt Warner coming up. So much to talk about from yesterday to talk about with him. Derwin James, our neighbor across the street of the Los Angeles Chargers, Albert Breer, to tell us why everything went down yesterday. There's you at 844-204-RICH, number to dial. I've got my power rankings as well, which means there'll be a lot of chirping from the audience. Good to see you over there, Chris Brockman. How are you?
I'm great. It's weird because we were so close to making a deal to get rid of Del Tufo yesterday.
No,
oh my, yeah, I was,
no.
I was going to be tricked.
Yeah, it was close. Him and we were going to send him to McAfee. It
I might
so
leave
close.
In like 2 weeks.
Excuse
like
me.
The
like
it was so close.
Excuse me. You're like Garrett Wilson. You're untouchable.
Thank you, Rich. See, okay? I respect that, Rich.
Huh? Everybody accuses
we were,
me of getting
we were
on
so
you.
So close.
See, you're untouchable.
See, we got like calls.
Okay. And I don't mean one of the, you know, untouchables that wound up in the elevator.
No, I don't want to be that guy.
Truly untouchable.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
I like it.
TJ Jefferson, candles lit. Good to see you, man. How are you?
So you mean we couldn't trade him for, like, I don't know, say, like, the Wolf or somebody? Like,
hey, listen, you got Wolf. Quinnen Williams yesterday.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Be quiet. Listen, the Cowboys started with Logan Wilson and ended with Quinnen Williams. And it went from, like, man, Jerry doesn't know what. Wait a minute. Hold on a second.
Settle down just a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, settle down just a little
exactly.
bit. You may wind up with Quinnen Williams.
My team did nothing.
Well, Rich, listen. I'm going to need you to talk me down a little bit because, you know, all the talking head experts are now saying we gave up too much. But I know you'll be able
we will have
to
this discussion on the program.
Thank you. I appreciate
listen,
it.
Listen, but it all does start with a team that dismantled its top five defense by trading away its two best defensive players in a span of about an hour for multiple draft choices, first rounds as well. Two ones for a 24-year-old corner in Sauce Gardner, who's just 3 years removed from being offensive rookie of the year, or 2 years, really.
Defensive
rookie of the year, and Quinnen Williams, who's one of the best in the business.
Indeed.
And guys that Jets fans thought would be lifetime Jets. And in the same way, you don't trade somebody like Micah Parsons at age 26 doing what he does. Those guys don't get traded. Neither do guys who are 27 like Quinnen Williams doing what he does and somebody in their mid-20s like Sauce Gardner doing what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
But just like everything with the Jets, it can't just be discussed in a vacuum. Which is why we begin today's show on, wait for it, January 4th. 2000.
Oh.
Why would I choose that date?
In the year.
Because in the year 2000.
I have no idea.
Excuse me. In the year 2000, it's just as I said, not in a vacuum. We're talking about this century that is a quarter of the way done. Bill Belichick on that day, January 4th, 2000, wrote on a cocktail napkin, I am resigning as the HC of the NYJ. He had just been named the head coach the day before.
That's right.
And he resigned. Mm. And the Parcells era that had the Jets having this guy as his defensive coordinator and the Jets on the precipice of the Super Bowl in an AFC championship game in Denver, only to run it back the next year with Vinny Testaverde, only to have him, wait for it, see if you've heard this one before, blow out his Achilles in the first game, and then have it go down the tubes. In that year of 2000, it started with that, and then 3 months later, the first round selection, who was the centerpiece of the offense, of the Parcells era. The first overall pick. Yes, kids, wide receivers used to get picked first overall. Keyshawn Johnson gets traded. Boom, boom. Belichick gone. Parcells is gone. Keyshawn's gone. And they traded him to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Stop me if you've heard that one before. And they got the 13th and 27th overall picks in the first round of the 2000 draft because they got a first rounder for Keyshawn. And, yeah, sure enough, this rebuild that led to Al Groh taking over the Jets with Wayne Krabet, this rebuild is one of their most successful. Because with that choice, they chose Jonathan Abraham. You remember Abraham?
Yeah, absolutely.
He got 53 and a half sacks for the Jets. He played 15 years, but only six with the Jets. And he was terrific. He tied Klecko and Gastineau's single game record once with four sacks in a game. They also got Anthony Beck with the 27th overall pick. He was a 12-year pro, just played five for the Jets. And that worked out with Herman Edwards to the tune of Herm taking the team to the playoffs a few times and going 2-3. A high watermark is when they boat raced Peyton Manning out of the playoffs once. That happened, kids. But it bottomed out in 2005 when they went 4-12, despite having Hall of Famers named Ty Law, Curtis Martin, and Kevin Y on the team. But anyway, so Abraham gets franchised. Tagged and he gets pissed because it was slapped on him. He didn't want it. Nope. And he wants to be traded, and the Jets oblige him in 2006. And they wound up trading him to Atlanta, and they got a first-round selection for that in the 2006 draft that turned into, may he rest in peace, Nick Mangold. And in that draft, they also used their own pick on DeBrickashaw Ferguson. That set up this offensive line. And that set things up for the next year. They drafted Darrell Revis. And that eventually led to Rex Ryan showing up. And with Rex and Revis and Sanchez and Mangold and DeBrickashaw Ferguson, they made not one but two AFC championship games. So buttons got pushed and the Jets got to the precipice again. Only to have it fall to crap. And Darrell Revis, who was a Jet, supposedly for life, he winds up having all these contract disputes that get played out on Hard Knocks, and he wants to be traded, and the Jets oblige him. Stop me if you've heard this before. Trade him to Tampa for a 2013 NFL draft overall draft choice, number 13 overall, who turned into Sheldon Richardson. And he played a grand total of 4 years for the New York Jets. They also got a fourth-round pick in Jalen Saunders, who is not in the Jets' ring of honor. So that one didn't work out so well because Rex bottoms out. He gone.
He gone.
Jets do nothing. I mean, Rex went 4-2 in the playoffs. The two losses in the AFC Championship game. The high watermark is when they knocked Tom Brady out of the playoffs.
Yep.
You know, can't wait, all that stuff.
Can't wait.
Didn't lead to a ring, though. Came close. But it all bottoms out again. 2018, newfangled Broadway Sam shows up. It's not the same darn old Jets that had a t-shirt. Charlie Yook, King of Spring, and the NFL Network gave me that for my birthday. Thank you, Charlie. That's now a relic. He shows up, third overall pick in 2018. Yes, kids, the kid who's killing it right now for the Seahawks.
Seen ghosts.
Had that happen to him while he was a Jet. And Todd Bowles is the coach. They fire him after drafting Darnold because they want to hook him up with an offensive guru, and the guy that they hook him up with is Adam Gase.
See, in Congress. We were,
I think, was he looking around for a
way out,
an exit sign?
He was looking for tacos.
It's Gase. Two seasons with him. He gone.
He gone.
And sure enough, in comes Robert Saleh because Gase bottomed out so badly, they have the second overall pick. And they use it on Zach Wilson. And welcome from BYU to New York City, from BYU to NYC. Zach, he's the hope. So we got to trade Darnold, right? And they off Darnold to the Panthers in exchange for a sixth-round pick in 2021 plus a second and a fourth in the 2022 draft, which the Jets crushed. They crushed. Because guess who showed up with that second-round draft choice? Breece Hall. Breece Hall. And in that draft, in the first round, they used the second of their three first-rounders on Garrett Wilson. Yep, that's what they did. Oh, by the way, reason why they had Garrett Wilson, they had the draft choice for him, is because in between Darnold and Zach Wilson, they traded away Jamal Adams as another reset to Seattle, which gave them two first rounders, including
that was a great trade.
The one they used on Garrett Wilson.
Yeah, that was a great trade.
Who wound up yesterday being untouchable along with apparently Breece Hall. But Sauce, who they chose as their first draft choice in 2022, he's gone for two ones as there's another reset. I actually decided to use artificial intelligence. And I went to the old AI machine, okay, and I put in how many rebuilds have there been for the Jets?
Oh, goodness.
How many Jets rebuilds have there been? And this is what shows up. Post Namath decline. Search for success that included Coslett, Carroll, and Kotite.
Uh-oh.
The Bill Parcells era. The post Parcells Edwards era. And then also post Rex Ryan. Oh, there's a name that we haven't mentioned yet, Robert Saleh. And there's another name that we haven't mentioned yet in Eric Mangini, because two of the other reset slash rebuilds included two defensive-minded head coaches who got their first head coaching gigs with the Jets, and it all went down the tubes eventually for them because the Packers' future first-ballot Hall of Famer 2.0s didn't work out for them. Favre for Mangini, although didn't Mangini name one of his kids Favre, the middle name, or Brett? Got a tattoo or something? I don't remember. And Saleh, obviously, as we all know, famously, with Aaron Rodgers. So it's kind of a tough sell when you're the general manager fresh to the job in Darren Mooji to sell this thing as hope. I know he's new. Aaron Glenn knows all about this stuff because he was part of the Parcells era. But he's new to the gig, and we can't put all the last weight for it quarter century on top of them. Although you look at the AI, this goes back to
to name
the Nixon administration. But he's going to go out there and sell this to the Jets fan base as hope. Hit it.
Darren, Breece Hall, what went into, if you're going to trade these two guys, what went into not trading Breece? Because it would seem like the guy who's a pending free agent would be part of the teardown here.
I wouldn't call it a teardown, and I understand the question, but like I said, through these processes, we talk about a lot of things, and we field a lot of calls, and we've got values, and Breece's a talented player, and he's going to help us compete and win games the rest of the season.
Except maybe not this Sunday, but, you know, he's right, though. It's not a teardown. They didn't trade Breece, who I, you know, bless him, because at this point in time, he's a free agent. He can walk. I mean, I guess they can do their best to try and keep him. Crazier things have happened. I do remember everybody thought Reggie Wayne. Him. I do remember Reggie Wayne was gone. Everybody thought in Indianapolis when they were sucking for luck, and he stayed. And look at what happened. I understand. And they thankfully looked at Garrett Wilson and said, "Not him. Yeah. Not today." Correct. And again, we don't know how large the iceberg is underneath, and Aaron Glenn and Mooji and everybody else there have taken stock on who's on the boat and who's not. Who's rowing against us and who's rowing with us. I get it. I understand. And plus two ones is tough to turn down, even for somebody as young and good as Sauce. But I think Joe Manganiello, bless him, who's enjoying the fruits of his Aaron Rodgers labor, unlike some of the Jets fans over the last 2 years, although it's a different organization, as this last 12 minutes have pointed out in Pittsburgh, than it is for the Jets. He sent me this post, this tweet. I don't know who Zoo Kruger is. I do know he's got a Namath emoji.
I saw this yesterday.
But this sums it up. Yep. If you weren't with the Jets during the rebuild, don't be with us during the rebuild.
Very funny.
As we said yesterday, it's like now is when all of the assets that we've had because we rebuilt before and we got and we came close with, or the rebuild assets that we got that we didn't come close with, and thus we have to trade them for another rebuild. All of those assets who rebuilt the team into just having to rebuild again because we didn't have this right or that right. Now is when it turns.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
It's a tough one. It's a very tough one. But you do have to go on. They do have multiple draft choices in the first and second days for the next two drafts that they can actually build the team with. You know, Matt Miller, our colleague at the Worldwide Leader, says the 2027 draft, that's the one that's going to be loaded. That's the one that the Jets have the Colts' first-round pick, Dallas's first-round pick, and their own first-round pick.
That'll be in Washington, D.C., by the way.
And that, you know, again, it's just, hey, Jets fans, you just got to hope that this thing turns around faster.
Man, hope is not a strategy.
Hope that Aaron Glenn has got it. Again, they started 0-10-1 in Detroit with Dan Campbell, and then, 1-5 the next year, something like that? Yeah. And then it turned around. Now look at him.
Yeah.
So you got to hope. And that Muji is the one, unlike, you know, Isaac and Bradway and Douglas and all the other general managers who have come and gone as part of the rebuilds, nail it, and then you pay them and you keep them, and they're happy. And you win, and you turn into, say, the Patriots all of a sudden, or the Lions, or Seahawks with Darnold.
Colts.
But in the meantime, if you weren't with them for the rebuild, then we don't want you for this rebuild.
He definitely said that.
Not in a vacuum. You can't look at it in a vacuum. You certainly cannot look at it in a vacuum.
Really good.
46 years.
And that's the way it goes. But they do have the draft choices. But they don't have Quinnen Williams, and they don't have Darrelle Revis anymore. And those are the guys, as part of the rebuild, who are supposed to build something where you don't trade them and you keep winning and you don't churn through coaches and general managers and you win. But now this is it. That's why they call fans... It's a base of fanatics. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Kurt Warner, when we come back, his thoughts on all of this. And he's got some interesting thoughts on the Jaden Daniels injury as well, coming up.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.
As many of you know, supporting pediatric cancer research is something I care deeply about. That's why I'm proud to share what Hyundai's doing through Hyundai Hope on Wheels. For over 27 years, with every Hyundai sold, they've helped fund pediatric cancer research. Alongside over 850 dealers, they've raised more than $277 million, helping over 25,000 kids and supporting more than 1,400 research grants at 175 institutions nationwide. This year alone, they've committed another $27 million in honor of the 27th anniversary of the program. And they're proud to have national youth ambassadors like Jackson Trin and Emmy Cole, who bring hope to kids across the country by sharing their stories. Because at Hyundai, hope is our greatest feature, and it comes standard. Visit HyundaiUSA.com and search Hyundai Hope on Wheels to learn more.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
As you know, managing maintenance, repair, and operations is never easy. But for the ones who always rise to the challenge, Grainger has your back. From professional-grade products you can count on to fast, dependable delivery, they're there to help you keep things running smoothly. Plus, their technical product specialists are here to help answer your toughest questions. And because Grainger knows safety is always a priority, they're committed to being your partner in protecting both your people and your facilities. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
The ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, audiences returned in the middle of the end of Kurt Warner telling us how back in 2007 he suffered a very similar injury, if not the same exact injury, that Jaden Daniels suffered, and was able to just come right back and play the next week with a brace, and not, saying that that's what Jaden Daniels should do. It's just what happened back then. And you had mentioned, Kurt, that Julius Peppers landed on your arm is what twisted it all up like that. Have you seen Julius at the Hall of Fame and revisited this conversation moment with him at all, Kurt, or no, not at all?
I've seen Julius, and I've congratulated him on the Hall of Fame, but this was not part of the conversation that we had. I didn't want to rehash that at all. Okay. So I'm sure Julius doesn't even remember. He's just going for a football like I was, but I'll never forget that for sure. I thought something interesting too, like when I went back in and played, an interesting thing is when we actually got down into the red zone, they took me out and put in Tim Rattay because of, you know, some of the aspects of the red zone and handing off in tight spaces and not wanting me to hand off with my off arm. And so, we took some unique precautions to make sure that I could play, but also, you know, wasn't hurting our team or myself in any way. And, you know, I think that would be another thing with Jaden Daniels is he plays the game obviously very different than I played the game. You know, running the ball and that aspect of things is such a dynamic part of Jaden's game. That could be another element in if we put him back in there, you know, is he going to put himself more in harm's way because he's used to running and making plays as opposed to me just standing in the pocket and delivering throws. So just another aspect to consider.
Kurt Warner here on the Rich Eisen Show. There's two injured quarterbacks in Kyler Murray and Brock Purdy right now, both in the NFC West. And we've seen what Mac Jones has done with Purdy being out.
Yeah.
Purdy has this big fat contract. So does Kyler Murray. Jacoby Brissett, as I mentioned yesterday, Kurt, the offense looks so much better under him. And as we find out, Kyler Murray may need another couple weeks still to be recovered. And a lot of people are wondering if that's just cover for the obvious. Is, from your estimation, Brissett operating this Drew Petzing offense better than Kyler Murray, Kurt?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think you could say better. I mean, I would just say more on schedule and more on time. You know, that's just who Jacoby is. You know, he's always been, a pocket tight passer that plays on time and on schedule. And Kyler, although really good when he's throwing to his number one guy and he knows where he wants to go with the football, obviously is a different kind of playmaker when he kind of gets beyond that and wants to create and make the big plays in other ways. And so, you know, when you're looking at in structure and timing and all of that stuff, Jacoby's, playing this offense and playing within this offense better than I think Kyler did, but they're different. And, you know, a lot of it does come down to how you want to play or, you know, feeling like, you know, even though Kyler may not do some of the things Jacoby has done, he does other things that makes their team better or different or special in different ways. And that's the interesting dynamic here is that, yes, it's easy to throw on the tape and say, okay, this looks better. You know, this looks more on schedule and maybe they've even been, you know, more successful in certain situations than they were with Kyler. But that doesn't automatically mean that this team is better and their offense is better without Kyler Murray and the dynamics that he brings. So it's an interesting, you know, situation when you have two guys, you know, like this situation that play drastically different. And then you talked about the San Francisco situation. Those are two guys that play very similar, you know, in how they're going to play the game. And so comparing the two of them, you know, I think you have to do it in a different way.
And obviously there's contracts that come into this. I mean, the Niners just paid Purdy a ton of money, and it's his locker room, or it has been. And I understand these toe injuries take a while to come back, but you're seeing how Mac Jones is playing. And back in the day, Bledsoe, right? Belichick stayed with the hot hand. And so what's your philosophy on all of this? Again, it's not, it's all different situations with contracts and when they were paid. And, you know, Kyler got paid a couple of years ago, maybe different in Arizona than it is in San Francisco. But what's just your general sense on this subject matter,
Kirk? Yeah, you know, obviously tough because I ended up getting my job because of an injury to Trent Green. And I think the one different caveat to that was, you know, Trent was a season ending injury. And so I had an entire season body of work, and we obviously won the Super Bowl that year. And so I think there can be situations like that with a prolonged body of work. A player that came in, you know, due to injury can hold on to that seat if the team is playing well and have rallied around him and, you know, and they're just they're playing good football, I guess, in terms of what Dick Vermeil said about me, playing good football in that situation. But I also think that it's easy for us to see a change in an offense when a guy goes in and automatically think, oh, that guy's just as good, or that guy's gives us the best opportunity to win. And the coaching staff and people in the building go, well, we can't forget about this playmaking aspect or this thing that Brock does different or that Kyler does different. And the reasons why we paid these guys, I know it's easy to forget that when the other guy goes in and you win or his stats are pretty good. But that to me is always the element when it comes back to that time. I think ultimately it should come down to who's the best guy for the job. Like, who's the guy that gives us the best chance that we believe is the best player in this situation, and we should play them. I've always felt that doesn't matter, you know, what situation you're in or where you're drafted or how much money you make. The one thing that I always thought was the beauty of sports was, you know, if you found yourself in a situation where it was true competition, where it was, hey, these are the guys that we have, the best player will play regardless. It doesn't, nothing matters. We're going to throw out all the other stuff and we're going to let the best player play. And that to me is what sport has always been. You know, I can use my situation in Arizona. They had drafted Matt High. He had played in 06, you know, and then, you know, Ken Whisenhunt, when he came in, kind of opened up the job again and said, I understand the situation and I understand, you know, Matt probably, you know, is going to get the first reps and get the first opportunity, but we're going to open it up and let the best player win the job. And I was very skeptical because a lot of situations are dictated by a lot of those other things. You know, how high did we draft them? How much have we invested in them? He stuck true to his word and said, Kurt, you're the better player. At this stage in your career, we're going to have you start. And it, you know, that meant a lot to me and obviously meant a lot to my career to be able to be inserted back into that situation. And so normally I would say you don't lose your job because of injury. You know, if you suffer a short-term injury and you were the guy before that didn't earn the job, you deserve the right to be placed back in there and, you know, quote unquote, lose the job, you know, in those situations. But I do believe at the end of the day, it's, you know, sometimes we can make mistakes and we have a guy in there that, okay, we think is the best guy. And then the other guy gets in and we go, wow, this guy's showing us things that we didn't know he had. And this guy's doing things that we didn't expect. You know, kind of like the Tom Brady, Drew Bledsoe thing. And it's like, hey, we think we've got something special here. We got to stay with this guy. And obviously that was, you know, maybe the best look at a good decision in that kind of situation.
All right. So I'm going to ask you a question, a type of question that I know you don't like to answer because I know you. But I'm going to ask it anyway because, you know, we go way back. Week 11, Arizona hosts San Francisco. Your best guess as to who the starting quarterbacks in week 11 are going to be? Kirk?
Brock Purdy and Kyler Murray, if they're healthy. I believe Brock is a difference maker for that team, and I don't think he gets enough respect for some of the things that he does in that offense. So I believe when he's healthy, he's inserted. With Kyler, I think, A, they have committed to him. And I think they're still trying to figure out, is he our guy moving forward? And the only way to truly do that is to let it play out and put him back on the field and, you know, get as much of a body of work as you can to determine, okay, do we believe he's the guy for us, you know, beyond this year or beyond, you know, whenever we have to move forward with the contract issues? Or do we think we need to go a different direction, that it's played out here in Arizona and we need to make another move? And so, although different situations, I think, with where the two teams are with their quarterbacks, I do believe when they're both healthy, they should be reinserted and, you know, and move forward from there.
If Jacoby Brissett, good old Jake Brissett, goes up to Seattle and wins that game to bring him to 4-5, do you think if Kyler's healthy, we see him at home against San Francisco the next week?
You think I mean, it's not an easy situation,
No.
But I do think that that's the case. Okay. And I love Jacoby. You know, I think he is, you know, one of the few backup quarterbacks, you know, use that term, backup quarterbacks in the league that has shown that they can be a starter and can be a starter in this league. And he's shown that when he's gone in. And I think that's another factor that we have to look at really with both of these situations, right? A lot of times you've got a team that has a definitive starter and then a definitive backup, you know, a guy that you look at as a backup that can come in and win a couple games for you and play well, but you don't see them as a long-term starter. Both of these situations have guys that have been starters in the National Football League. I mean, we know that, you know, that they've played at an extremely high level. Mac Jones was a Pro Bowler at one point in time. And so both of these guys, you know, you're not just looking at it like a normal situation. You've got quality backups there that, you know, are borderline starters in the National Football League anyway. So you shouldn't expect a huge drop off from your starter to these guys that we're talking about.
Kurt Warner here on a Warner Wednesday on the Rich Eisen Show. Two guys hopping a flight to Germany. I'm looking at one of them, right? Yep. You're calling with Adam Amin this weekend, the Colts and the Falcons on NFL Network. Another guy is Sauce Gardner because he's now on the Indianapolis Colts. You will be calling his first game as a Colt. What a surprise. What a blockbuster that was on Tuesday. How do you think Sauce fits into what they do schematically for a 7-2 team? This is a pretty aggressive move. What do you got for me?
Yeah, huge move. I mean, I think it lets you know where they feel they are as a football team right now and you know, moving forward to go get a young corner that's shown that he can play as well as anybody in the league. I think he fits into their scheme. And the thing about Sauce is that I think he can fit into different schemes because I think he's really good in man-to-man coverage, you know, kind of what he was known for coming out of college. So you can place him in those situations. I also feel like he's a guy that can play, you know, zone coverage and play with his eyes and his instincts as well. And so I think he can fit really well into what they're doing in Indy. You know, they needed an uptick on defense. Their offense has been great. Defense, especially in kind of pass situations, needed that uptick. And so I'm excited to see this. I don't know what it will look like on Sunday when a guy just gets there and fitting into the schemes. And, you know, obviously on the other side, you know, Drake London had a huge game and would be a great matchup, both kind of big, tall, long players going at it would be a great matchup for us in this game. But, you know, I've never gone through that where I've been traded in the middle of the season and you have to get up to speed and figure out how you fit in and how much you can play, you know, in the short term. So I'm excited to see how that works. You know, also don't know a lot about defenses. If you go from one team to another and you say, hey, we're playing cover three, is it basically the same from one team to another, or are there a lot of nuances within it? But, you know, be interesting to ask those questions over the next couple of days in our production meetings and then obviously see how it plays out on Sunday.
And let me ask you this one, Kurt Warner. If I had told you back in the summer when this deal with Micah Parsons was going down, right? If I had told you that Jerry Jones could trade Micah Parsons for Kenny Clark, Quinnen Williams, and a first-round draft choice, would you have made that trade? because that's what's happening right now.
It is.
He flipped. He flipped. He was able to. He was able to flip his 1 2 years from now because he's got one from Green Bay in his back pocket, and he got Quinnen Williams and Kenny Clark. You know, and obviously he flipped another 2 to the Jets for Quinnen. But this is the end result right now here, as we know it, going into week 10 of this season. They are 3-5-1, partially because Micah's not there to rush the passer. So what do you think now that we're
you
here?
Know, I mean, I think, you know, if, you know, a couple of years from now, if we see what that number one pick does and who that is, you know, I mean, you obviously got two really good players, you know, in Clark and Williams. I mean, obviously they're good football players without a doubt. So you've upgraded the interior, your defensive line, but you've also lost, you know, a guy that most of us feel is a generational type player. And so, again, I think it's always hard for me to go, okay, it's a good move to let somebody go that is such a difference maker like Micah is. You know, I remember when I was in Arizona and, you know, played with Anquan Boldin. And there was always talk about, you know, him leaving. And obviously the year after I retired, you know, they sent him on his way to another place. And, you know, it was always the talk about, well, you know, he's not the most talented guy, doesn't run the fastest, you know, all of these things. And all I thought every time I heard it was like, you guys don't get it. I mean, this guy is a great football player. He brings things to the table that I don't care if you get somebody faster or that fits your mold more. They will not be Anquan Boldin. They won't bring to the table what he does. But too many people miss that. Now, I'm not sure they miss that necessarily with Micah because you see it. But my point being is that these guys that are great football players change the complexion of everything for your football team, how you play, what you believe. You know, when the game's on the line, you've got a guy that you know you can go to in those situations and will make that play, will be that difference maker for you. And so those guys, I don't think, can ever be overvalued. But I think a lot of teams do. They think they're overvalued because whatever, we can get two guys, we can get a first round pick. But what they do is special and different. And I just, you know, to me, I don't know if you ever win. And again, we can see what that first round pick is they get in a couple years. But, you know, Clark and Williams are good players. They're not Micah Parsons. And so to me, you don't win unless you find a way to replace that difference making piece that Micah Parsons brings to the table, even though they had a lot of other issues. That difference making piece is what this game is all about. The end of the day, there's a lot of parity in this league. What separates the great teams from everybody else are having enough of those kind of players that in the moment make the play that are difference-making plays, you know, and that's what it's all about. And so it's hard. I'm hard-pressed to think that the Dallas has won this trade, you know, this trade battle that they've been on by letting Micah Parsons walk out the door.
All right. In the minute and a half I have left, the usual segment ender with you, grinding all the All-22 you do for QB, QB Confidential. Everybody should subscribe to it on YouTube. The guy who looked the best on film this past week, best performance.
I'm going to stay in the NFC West, and I'm going to give you actually two guys. But if I had to pick one, I'm going to go Sam Darnold. I mean, how you go 16 for 16 in the first half, winging it down the field, 4 touchdowns, 200, almost, I think, 300 yards in the first half of that game. I mean, he was incredible. I mean, he played a great football game, continued on with what he's done all year. And then we could go, you know, to the team in L.A. with Matthew Stafford, who continues to light it up as well. He's playing great football. We saw 5 touchdowns in London. He had 4 more. This past weekend, I think I heard 21 or 22 touchdowns to just 2 interceptions at this point. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, we were talking about MVP candidates on our show on Sunday, and we didn't even have this guy on the board. And this guy's right smack dab in the middle of the MVP conversation, in my opinion. So those were the two guys that jumped off the page or off the film this weekend.
Well, 21 touchdowns through the first eight games of the season, third most all time for the Rams, second behind his 2021 season. But three behind who threw 24 in his first eight games of the 1999 season is the quarterback of the St. Louis Rams. Who did that? That'd be you, Kurt Warner. That'd be you. I love tooting your horn because you'll never do it yourself.
Well, thank you.
You're the best. Have a safe journey to Germany. Look forward to hearing your call, and then I'll see you back the following week.
All right, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Kurt Warner, everybody. Oh. Go and subscribe to QB Confidential. And, of course, check him out on NFL Network Sunday morning from Berlin, Colts-Falcons. We take a break, come back, talk about the trade that wasn't made. That was the best one not made. Coming up next on The Rich Eisen Show.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, presented by Progressive Insurance on ESPN Radio. See why over 43 million drivers trust Progressive to stay protected on the road. See for yourself at progressive.com. So I'll have to say this carefully and quickly, so don't interrupt. All right. You remember, Chris, we were role-playing about Howie Roseman taking phone
okay,
calls.
Okay, good. I was waiting for you to finish.
For Jay Brown.
Yeah.
I had to front load you doing a "That's What She Said" joke.
My mic was muted.
Okay,
I'm
good.
Sure.
Okay. Is that the way to make sure you stay out? Did you turn your microphone off?
Yeah. Like, okay. Hey,
that's every now and then. Do it.
Yeah. It's not optimum. I mean, I'd like to hear from you.
Well, sometimes I can't control myself.
Understood. But you remember when everyone was saying, AJ Brown's available, he wants out and all that. And you were like a GM and I was like Howie Roseman. And I'm like, you're like, hey, you know.
I pretended to be a GM from the Northeast.
Okay. And I basically said GTFOH.
Pretty much. Okay.
That was new. Although apparently, who told us that? Was it Pelissero told us Mickey Loomis
just hangs up
on people when they bring up names that he has no intention of trading?
Hello, when
you hear the cut of Kamara is like Alvin.
Chris, oh, hello, what?
Chris, hello. All right. sure enough, AJ Brown's still an Eagle. Shock the world. Howie Roseman talked about that.
I think that when you're trying to be a great team, it's hard to trade great players. And AJ Brown's a great player. He wears the C for a reason. He's an important part of this team, of this organization. He cares about winning. He cares about his teammates. And, you know, I think that when you're a team like ours that is looking forward to an opportunity to compete for a championship, you just don't get rid of the guys like that. And so feel very lucky to have him on our team. And excited about the second half of the season with him.
Isn't that an amazing concept? When you have, how about this? Sometimes, you know, caps are confusing and, you know, trade charts are confusing, drafts are, it's a very confusing job. When you're generally managing, it could be generally confusing, you know? But sometimes it's just, you should just manage in general. When you have great players, and you want to be great as a team, you don't trade great players. Nope. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't recommend that. No.
No.
It's amazing sometimes.
What a concept.
What a concept.
Yeah, what a concept.
Great concept.
All right. So let's just put it this way. You want to be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. And your team collectively wishes to be great for collectively a franchise that wishes to be great. So what you should do is get players who are great and hold on to the great players.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Good.
In general, that's how you should manage. And then call up the Dolphins and say, how about a 3 for your arguably best pass rusher? How about I'll get Jair Alexander for nothing, even though he hasn't done much for the Ravens or, as you know, the Packers and some of the final throws of his time there. Dude. And Ravens fans are like freaking out. We didn't do anything. Bills fans, we didn't do anything. Patriots didn't do anything. Patriots traded away people.
We got rid of players.
We don't need all these people.
We
don't need all these people. And the Eagles are like, that's what we're going to do. Again, we'll take your best or some of the best, and we'll get it at a bargain spot, and we'll see how it goes. Because if it doesn't go well, we've got other people to kind of handle it.
You see the phone ring. It says Howie Roseman.
And then you hang up.
Don't answer it.
Don't answer it. Yeah. Don't answer it.
She's like it's a really metal collector.
Great idea. Great
metal
idea.
Collector.
You want to be great? Keep your great players. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance returns for Hour 2 in a sec.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.